that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back to the Fenway Rundown presented by Mass Live. It's been a very, very good week for the Red Sox, and here to talk about it all, it's me, your host, Chris Cotillo, and also Matt Vautour, my colleague at Mass Live. Matt, I know the Celtics are the big story in town, but the Red Sox are obviously hot. They won 6 out of 7 games on the homestand. As I wrote yesterday, it was quite the memorable stretch for them. From someone who covers all four teams, is this team relevant again?
I think the Celtics being good kind of provided the Celtics and obviously the Bruins in the playoffs provided the Red Sox with some nice cover early on, because the people's focus was elsewhere. And so I think if this is a real, kickstart and not just a nice forgotten weekend, I think it's when people start to pay closer attention to the Red Sox and start, looking at this, it's baseball weather outside, that the Red Sox will be in better shape for it. So yeah, I do think the Red Sox are always relevant, and they're about to become more relevant in a better place than they were before.
And as I wrote yesterday in my column, it felt like early part of the season, offense wasn't swinging the bat well. The bullpen was blowing some games. It was kind of the same script day in and day out. The weather wasn't great. That just seemed like a lot of sleepy days. A lot of days were post-game. It was like, should I just write the same story that I've done, a million times previously? And this week, it's been completely different. Every day, kind of brought out, I think iconic is a little bit too strong of a word, but a signature win or, a very memorable one. Even the loss, as I wrote in the column, was a pretty memorable day. So just going through the games of the homestand, the first one, rain delay, Trevor Story hits his first Red Sox homer. Xander Bogaerts, with chance of re-sign Xander, hits a clutch homer there. The loss was Eovaldi historically giving up 5 homers. Then you have, Pivetta's complete game, 2-hit complete game against Houston. Then the Seattle series, you have Story's 3 home runs in the opener. You have the grand slam caught by Johnny Gomes on Friday night. On Saturday, they come back from a 5-0 deficit to win. And on Sunday, obviously, that performance with, Franchi Cordero launching a walk-off grand slam and, pretty unlikely candidate to do that. But, Fenway was going nuts, though it was pretty hot and muggy. I just think, every day was like a, wow, this is a really, big moment for this team. This is a real, big moment to captivate the fans. And that's my takeaway. And I think that's the real takeaway here, is they are entertaining again. They're captivating again. And that's something that just wasn't there for most of the season so far.
Yeah, I think it, especially when you look at Pivetta pitching the way that he did, that felt like a baseball game in the way that people like baseball games. You starting pitcher, you want to be an attraction, a guy that you get excited about. And then you think about walk-offs, to kind of have Pivetta early in that series, and then to come back and have Franchi get the walk-off at the end of it, and have Story kind of find himself in the middle. That's a pretty complete list of things, boxes you'd have wanted to check off for the Red Sox, as from a fan standpoint, things that you wanted to see, and to get all of those one series against a Mariners team that's pretty good. I think you're right. I think that's kind of, it's funny because over 162 game season in baseball, you can look at a lot of numbers, but there definitely are mood swings for a team. And so to get something that sparks a good one can go a long way, especially about to go on the road.
Yep, for sure. I think going back to what you said about the Mariners, I thought they were a good team heading in. I'm not so sure now, but to me, the more impressive part of it is the Astros were really hot heading in. They had, gone on a big streak right before that, and to take 2 out of 3 from them, I think is even the more impressive part. But like I said, 6-1 on the homestand, and for them, they're right back home on Friday. It's only a 3-game road trip, so they'll have a chance to really pile up some wins with the Orioles and Reds coming into town. You know, I know that different people have had different hot takes about Trevor Story in the first couple months of the season, the first 6 weeks. Some people have written him off as a bad deal already. I wasn't ready to do that. I kept saying on Twitter, I'll judge the deal after 6 years. You know, there was comparisons, whether it be, you know, Carl Crawford or Pablo Sandoval or some of these guys that have come through from other teams in smaller markets and not been fits. And to me, I mean, it just was very premature. And you know, I obviously don't think that he is going to be the guy who we've seen in the last week, you know, hit 365 with 5 homers and, you know, get basically a threat to go yard every single time. But I do think, you know, there is an adjustment period for a guy like that that people don't talk about, you know, the off the field stuff. You know, I said this before, I think on here, but for Trevor Story, he's learning a new team, a new city, how to be a father, how to play a new position in second base, and also how to hit leadoff for part of it. I know that's not the case anymore. I mean, there was a lot of things that he's never done before in his life that were all thrown at him, you know, during that time, the condensed spring training, going home for the birth of his child, you know, going back and forth, all that type of stuff. You know, there's no excuses for a guy making $23 million a year and expected to perform, but, and he didn't make any, but I'll be willing to make them. And now we're seeing, you know, that now that he's comfortable, he's sliding into where he needs to in the lineup. And I think as the Red Sox, as Trevor Story goes, the Red Sox lineup goes right now.
Yeah, it's when you look at a guy, especially when you're switching leagues and things, that it can be a pretty significant adjustment for a guy just to and as you said, the added things that he faced here more than other people, it certainly becomes something in his case that you wonder how much is in his head versus how much is in his swing. And to look at anybody before Memorial Day and take anything out of a season, you've seen lots of guys. And I think it probably had to be weighing on him a little bit too, that he's kind of being associated with this Xander Bogaerts question. And I think, yep. and I think that's gotta stick with somebody too, because he's, in some ways, fans are looking at him and thinking, all right, well, the Red Sox are planning to move on from Bogaerts, and he's the potential replacement. And if he's struggling, that they're going to be more angry about it than they would be if he was the guy playing, you know, replacing Hunter Renfroe or something out there. It's a different set of pressures.
I think, you know, to me, covering Story, and it's not, you know, I'm not going to pretend to know him super well through, you know, just 2 weeks of spring training and 6 weeks of the season or whatever. But, you know, the takeaway of his personality is very, very measured. I think, you know, a good comp is, you know, Nathan Eovaldi's a guy who, you know, heart rate always seems to be, you know, slow and very calm. And, you know, his demeanor doesn't change based on things. A very hard worker, works out all the time. You know, with Story, it's not like he's necessarily, you know, dull. It just, he doesn't have a big personality. And I think he's just focused on the craft and really, like, you know, obsessed with his process and really just kind of that, you know, slow and steady presence. And I think, you know, we've seen guys like that. You know, I think, you know, JD Martinez is kind of an example too, though he'll say some interesting things on the record. But you know, guys like that sometimes fit here. I mean, he's able to block out the noise. He's able to appreciate kind of the moment. You know, we saw that over the weekend when Johnny Gomes caught his grand slam and he thought that was really cool and got the ball and all that type of stuff. But at the same time, you know, not, you know, getting too high at times and not getting too low at times. And I do think the personality is a fit. You know, I don't think he's going to be that loud, you know, cowboy up Kevin Millar type leader in there, but I do think that
who is,
you know, right. You know, the work ethic kind of speaks for itself. He's already gotten the respect of those in the clubhouse. And, you know, we've seen it, not just on the offensive side of the ball, but at second base, he's been really, really good too. And we've seen, you know, not just the fantastic plays, but the routine plays and the double plays are coming together and all that type of stuff. So, so far, you know, I think so good. Yeah. He's hitting .226. It's not obviously where they wanted it, but it's he's definitely shown he's shown signs of life in the last week would be really understating it, I think.
Most of the time at second base, you almost forget that it's a new position for him. Most of the time you're watching him, his footwork looks pretty solid, and his comfort level, he doesn't look like he's thinking it the way some of them. And you look to Bobby Dalbec a lot of times at first base, and he still sometimes looks like he's thinking it.
Right. And not his natural spot, obviously.
Right. And so it's for Story, a guy that was, you know, he's now kind of playing the photo negative of what he was doing before. It looks pretty, he looks comfortable in that, and that's so important because so many things go through the pivot up the middle for on both of those positions. And if one of them isn't right, it feels like things are coming unglued.
And I'll, you know, cite I always say future friend of the program, Red Sox stats, because I'd love to have whoever this is on, because, you know, no one knows who it is. And to have kind of the disguised voice and all that type of stuff would be a really great podcast. But Red Sox stats just tweeted out. Red Sox Story has figured out playing second base. In May, he's the leader among second basemen and outs above average at +3, runs prevented at +3, and success rate at 92%. So he passes the eye test and, you know, defensively passes the metrics test now as well.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And it allows you to be able to say, okay, you can bring back Bogarts and have he and Story be a double play combination for potentially a long time.
Right.
There's certainly logic there. It seems like you see guys go at this point in their career more from shortstop to third more often. And for him to do it, to go from shortstop to second as effectively as he did, really kind of says something about both his athleticism and his ability to mentally process and think the game.
Yeah. And Kike Hernandez, who had done it in the early parts of his career in the minor league, said it's all about, the whole thing is about, you know, it's like you're playing in front of a mirror. You know, you're going to the other side than you've been going for your whole career. And that obviously is going to take time. I do want to talk about, you know, it can't be all positive. It was yesterday. There's no Franchi Cordero walk-off if there is no bullpen meltdown. And for, you know, I think the sixth or seventh time in the ninth inning, the Red Sox had a blown save. Hansel Robles gets the Mariners down to their last out. Eugenio Suarez launches one over the monster. Jake Diekman, you know, I can't ever fault a guy for giving up an unearned run with the ghost runner and extra innings. I really just, I mean,
right.
I can't look at that as a meltdown. But with Robles, you know, that's legit. You have, you know, bases empty, two outs, you know, you got to find a way not to allow a homer there. And Robles is a guy that, you know, he's had a good year ERA-wise, but, you know, you don't really feel like you can fully trust him in those spots. So, you know, I know we were talking about this a little bit before we started rolling, but where is the trust factor with this bullpen right now? You know, it's like the numbers are almost deceiving, right, when you look at them, because I think the bullpen ERA for the series against the Mariners, I think, was like 1.3, you know, and they had their good moments, but still, like, there's the blown game in there yesterday. And you look at just up and down some of the numbers for these guys and the ERAs, which I know it's some might say it's an outdated stat and you got to look at some other metrics, but the ERAs for a lot of these relievers are definitely better than what the eye test would tell you. I mean, you look at Jake Diekman now, 2.35, Robles, 2.65. Austin Davis has actually been pretty good. He's a 1.96. Matt Strom, 1.88. Now, I think that's pretty indicative because he's been lights out. And, you know, Sawamura, 3.65. That's even lower than you'd expect. It just, to me, you know, you're still having to piece it together on a nightly basis. We saw Matt Barnes get a save in a one-run game the other night. You know, that is definitely playing with fire, to put it lightly. And you know, with Robles, with Diekman, these guys, you know, they're trying to find their roles. But to me, I still stick by just putting Matt Strom in the closer's role and letting everything else fall in place around him. As good as the week was, it's still hard to shake that feeling that it's an incomplete roster and that at the end of games, you're just holding on to the edge of your seat because anything could happen.
Well, I think some of the reason that the bullpen numbers are eye test this evening is you forget that Jake Diekman pitched a scoreless inning on one night because Sawamura blew a lead spectacularly an inning later.
Yeah.
Whatever he did in the seventh doesn't matter a whole lot if somebody blows right up in the eighth. And I think each guy has had multiple turns being the guy that it's blown up loudly for. And so even if it's inherited runners that are scoring, it's still a job that you're asking them to do that they're not fulfilling, even if that doesn't show up in the ERA. And so I think you're right at this point. Strom has been good. And so maybe you wonder sometimes, these guys, all the math says, all right, yes, have a bullpen where you don't have defined inning roles. But sometimes mentally those guys are better if they know, all right, I'm gonna pitch in this inning and that situation. Red Sox have bounced around a little bit with that. And I think it's important to get to have some of those guys get into some level of comfort level and some level of rhythm, because it doesn't look like they're doing that. The question is, do they have enough guys to do that, or are they faking it all the way through? You really hope a guy like Schreiber, who has been a nice addition so far, can slot in. I mean, you look at what Ryan Brazier was a couple of years ago. He came in and really solidified things.
Or, you know, in 2019, Brandon Workman emerging out of, you know, almost not making the team to being the basically like an all-star level closer. I mean, you need to hit on a couple of those guys, and I think they have one in Schreiber for sure.
And you wonder if Winkowski is a guy that might fill that down in Worcester right now. So there's options, and Caleb Ort's been decent for them. Durbin Feldman was a guy, he has not done it yet, but he has a guy that had at one point people thought had major league stuff. And, you know,
Kelly's another guy in Worcester.
Yeah. Great call, Zach Kelly. And so I think the question is, how quickly can they figure it out? Because you can't be losing the games that they're losing right now. Without having starting to get some stability, because the season is long, but it is moving along now.
Right. And Alex Cora said time and time again, he wants that structure. He wants a set closer. He wants a set setup man. Last year it was, you know, early on, it was Ottavino in the eighth, Barnes in the ninth, you know, pretty simple. The year before, you know, in 2020, Cora wasn't here, but Workman was the guy until he got traded. So they're trying not to do the thing they did early in 2019, where Barnes is the rover and the high leverage reliever. And they're trying to just, you know, get that structure. So far, haven't been able to do it. Let's look ahead to wrap up at the next week for the Red Sox. They have a series against the White Sox. The last time they saw the White Sox at Fenway Park, it obviously did not go very well, as they were swept. They'll be there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Nick Pivetta against Dylan Cease in the opener. Rich Hill against Lucas Giolito in the Wednesday night game. And then Michael Wacha against TBD on Thursday night. To me, as I look at those three games, obviously a couple of tough pitching matchups, and Cease and Giolito are both off to good starts this year. But with the way the Red Sox are hitting right now, you know, it sometimes if you're really on a roll, it doesn't matter who you're facing. On Sunday, they hit Logan Gilbert, who, you know, is, people don't really know about him, but he's, you know, very, very good for Seattle. And, you know, they were able to get to him enough. So I don't know. I don't think that I look at those names and they're very scary considering how well the Red Sox are hitting. I think the good part of this for the Red Sox is, for a team that just went 6-1 at home, they will be back at home on Friday. And as I said, facing the Orioles for five games in a five game series and a doubleheader, and then facing the Reds for two games, that gives you a chance to really rack up some more wins and kind of carry this momentum. I mean, I think Fenway, and I don't think any of the seven games were sellouts over the last week. The crowds were really good. You know, there was some weird weather with the rain and then the humidity yesterday. I think, you know, when they come back next weekend, they, you know, maybe when the team's playing a little bit better, I think that, you know, you might see the ballpark get a little bit more full.
I wonder, when you look at the matchups going into that White Sox series, I like Nick Pivetta going up against a good opponent. I think the way he's wired, I think there's something to that. And now that he's pitched better lately, and you tell me, what have you seen something in him that feels like it has changed or sparked that has gotten him back to being the pitcher he was last year, as opposed to the pitcher he was in April?
I mean, I just think that he's a guy that some days you're going to get like no hit stuff, and some days he's not going to get out of the second or third inning. I think that's just who he is. You know, the Red Sox are just trying to get him to a point where it's more of the last three outings than it was the previous outings. And I think the fastball command has been better, mixing and matching the secondary pitches. I mean, the stuff is always there with them. The competitiveness is always there. Some days he just comes out and doesn't have it, and you see that early and he gets hit around. I mean, he has more blow up starts than you'd like for your number two starter, but he also, like I said, when he's on, he's really on. There's really nothing in the middle. Against the White Sox last year in Chicago, he came off the COVID IL in September and pitched a gem. So, you know, he has recent success in that ballpark against that lineup for sure.
I'm curious to see how that rotation as a whole plays itself out when guys are healthy. If mm-hmm. if Sale comes back and he's a guy that can give you 5 innings, if Paxton is a guy that you can use, you know, I'm curious to see just how with him, given the extent of it, how, you know, are they going to get to a point where he can go 5 innings and you're following him with Tanner Houck or something every time, but which of these guys that are starters now could help fix the bullpen, and which of these guys you're looking at staying in the rotation based on where they found the most rhythm.
And we always talk about the Whitlock question. I think if Sale and Paxton are part of the mix, that moves Whitlock back to the bullpen, at least for the rest of this year, because we've seen, you know, Whitlock in the rotation has been a little bit bumpy. His last outing, 10 hits, was not a good one. He was the first to admit that in a very hoarse voice, which was quite the scene post game. But, you know, I think that the Red Sox are starting to realize maybe that he is, you know, a relief candidate, just at least for the rest of the year, because it hasn't been as smooth sailing as they'd want for him in the rotation. We'll end with this. There is an interesting news subplot that's going to be unfolding next week for the Red Sox, I believe. I wrote last week that there are 114 guys who have made their major league debuts this year. None of them have been for the Red Sox. I think, barring a surprise, that is going to change on Saturday. The Red Sox have a doubleheader against the Baltimore Orioles, a scheduled doubleheader as part of the makeup games when, you know, the lockout screwed with the schedule a little bit. And so now they're making up a certain series against the Orioles through three separate games. Kind of weird. Anyway, on Saturday, it looks like the Red Sox are going to be calling up Josh Winkowski from Worcester to make one of those starts. That is not official, but Alex Cora told us to read the tea leaves. I dug into the tea leaves. He pitched yesterday, pitched well for Worcester. Matt, I know you've been a few times. And
sure, yeah.
What have you, what do you know about Josh Winkowski, and what should Red Sox fans be expecting?
I mean, he's a guy that when he's on, he's struck out a fair amount of guys. He's got a nice rhythm when he's working. I'd be surprised, based on just the way he's outwardly carried himself in Worcester, I'd be surprised if he's intimidated in the moment. I would imagine he'll probably be fired up in the moment, but I think that I'll be curious to see second and third time through the, you know, second time through the order. I wouldn't be surprised that if his stuff plays one and two times through the order, the first time as teams don't have a book for him. I could see him being a guy that is effective and somebody the Red Sox might look at as being in a similar role to Schreiber at mm-hmm. one point. They I thought they might call him up sooner because he had a 2-inning start a few weeks back,
yep.
and it was scheduled for that. I think with the thought in mind being that might be the length of time that they would use him in Boston. So I could see him making the most of this as an audition.
Yeah, and, you know, I think a big part of that for him getting the audition is that Connor Siebold's hurt with that pectoral strain at Worcester. So, you know, we know that Siebold, other than one blow up, has been really, really good to start the year. But something to look forward to for people who love prospects, people who love, you know, major league debuts. I think that's going to happen on Saturday. And, you know, the writing's on the wall there. If Josh Winkowski pitches a gem, Franchy Cordero hits another home run, then I think the Red Sox can officially be declared the winners of that Andrew Benintendi trade, as I obviously say in jest. So that's Matt Votor. I'm Chris Cotillo. Appreciate everyone, as always, reading our coverage on Mass Live. I'll be in Chicago for the rest of the week, and then Chris Smith and I will be covering the games at Fenway. We'll be back next week with your next Fenway Rundown.